Welcome to the online dental mentoring service, where Dr. Derry Rogers and Associate Professor Michael Stubbs present clinical overviews and speak to dental leaders on the developing areas of modern day practice to assist you to develop and grow yours. Visit onlinedentalmentoring.com for more podcasts and training videos, all available free to our subscribers. We hope you enjoy today's show. Well, thanks for joining us again at Online Dental Mentoring, the home of online support for dental professionals, enabling them to create the practice that they've always wanted to work in. Well, this week, Michael and I will be discussing communicating with patients, especially after the COVID lockdown, and the ways to create a clear and concise communication pathway to enable our patients to understand the issues that we see and how they can optimize their dental health for the long term by understanding what's actually happening in their mouths. Mike, let's start on your part of the world. What key insights do you have communicating with your patients, both those in pain and those coming to you with concerns in the mouth?
Well, thanks, Derry. I think the first one I'd always advise myself, anyway, this is what I do, is I listen to the patient. I ask them what the problem is. Can they explain to me a little bit about what concerns they might have? What have they been experiencing? Because I think it's important that any person, particularly the patient, wants to be heard. And second, I think when you listen to the patient, you get an idea or a bit of an appreciation anyway of what their main priorities are. I think one of the problems we have as health professionals is we listen to the patient and then we start thinking about how we'd solve the problem. But it's very important not to lose sight of the fact that the patient's come in with a particular issue and it must be addressed as prime and center of your management plan, bearing in mind you obviously may explain they need other things. And I think the third thing would have to be that you get a bit of a sense of perhaps call it body language. But, you know, some patients might say to you or indicate through their concerns and in particular what's bothering them particularly about their mouth, you might get an insight into the fact, are they anxious? So therefore, you know, is any kind of major dental procedure going to be an overwhelming experience for that individual? And you might modify your approach. You might look at sedation, for example. Is the actual patient's main concern financial? And again, you know, people give clues when they talk. For instance, you might have somebody that comes in and says to you, look, you know, I'm under a lot of pressure. I've got a lot of stress at home. And, you know, my teeth are really sore and I've just come back to work and so on and so on. And you start to get the insight, well, you know, instead of telling the patient, look, you know, we can fix your mouth with multiple crowns, do an occlusal splint, and we can do lots of things for you and send you off to a special physio for your jaw, and the patient's sitting there looking at you thinking, this is going to cost me an arm and a leg and I don't have the funds. It's about saying, well, what can we do today that actually will help, and what can we do next week that'll help more, and gradually unravel the problem piece by piece. So I think they're the things that I do. I always ask the patient what their problem is, and I always then discuss in the context of that what the problem is. And then I may obviously ask them a series of questions myself. But in the context of that, I'm aware that they've come with a problem. It's important that that particular problem is discussed, addressed, and more importantly, other issues that may or may not be relevant are talked about, but not losing sight of the reality of why they came to see you. How about you, Derry? I mean, I know in your practice too, you've always had a very interesting and I have to say a very clever communication model that you've been talking about for many years. And you might like to explain to the listeners a little bit more about how you associate the dentist with the type of patient that they may be having in front of them and what's the best way forward as far as the dentist can understand and appreciate the individual they're about to treat, so they get a good outcome.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. We have a slightly different, I guess, process. It's imperative to actually listen to the patient, and I pre-screen the patient before I go into what I call personality profiling. So as you've said, I'll ask them about the issue, I'll sit and I'll listen for the first 2, 3, 4 minutes, and I'm trying to discern their style of personality, whether they be a director, socializer, relator, or thinker. And we define those different personality styles on their E's and A's. Their E's, their emotive levels, how much they share of themselves, and their A's, their assertive levels. So a director has a low E and a high A. They're very demanding but don't share much about their lives and what's going on behind the person. Socializer, the home of a lot of cosmetic dentistry, have high E's and high A's. Very emotive, share a lot about themselves, but very demanding as well. The relator is a high E, but it takes time to actually see that emotive side. So they need to take time to trust, as the name suggests. They need to build a relationship first, and their A's are relatively low. This is the sort of client that, especially in this day and age, is coming in post-COVID with a fractured tooth probably. You advise them that they need a crown. You might put a temporary on it. They go out to make an appointment at reception for the crown prep. And 2 to 3 days prior to the crown prep, they or a friend calls up to cancel. You were probably dealing with a relator. And we'll talk in a different podcast about how we manage each of these personality styles, how we work with them, and how we optimize the best way to help them understand and see the dentistry that they need. The fourth personality style we often see is the thinker. Their E's are low, their A's are low. You feel sitting there sometimes talking to these people that you want to reach out and give them a shake and just ask what's actually really going on inside there. They use their mental skills and mental processing to work out what it is that you're actually saying. Now, the key area in this personality profiling model is that the dentist has to understand what they are themselves, what style of personality that the dentist is. And understand that when a patient comes in that is similar to them, they're probably as treats like would dictate, you'll get on with them very well. But imagine a thinker trying to work with a socializer or a director trying to work with a relator. So we spend a lot of time just basically processing the style of the personality that we have in front of us, and then modify our communication skills accordingly to optimize the way the patient hears about what's going on. The easiest way we do that is a series of intraoral photographs. We take a series of 8 to 9 intraoral photographs with a DSLR camera, digital single lens reflex camera, and show the patient at their presenting appointment, whether a new patient exam or recall, what's actually in their mouths, what's going on. It's not a time that we diagnose. It's a time that we share our findings. The recommendations of what we see are there, and also the potential that if no treatment is considered, what the risks are of the patient heading back to their lives and fracturing a very heavily filled tooth, which is exactly what we're seeing at the moment in these COVID times. So that personality style is imperative to help us modify the way we communicate. The photographic records enable us to discuss in a very systematized way the following areas that we break down diagnosis to: aesthetics, function, structure, biology, gingivy, and decay rates. So these photos enable us to show the patients inside their mouths as we see it, and then our recommendations can be made as to what we need to look at and sow the seeds of a case presentation visit or a case discussion visit a week or two after the patient has been in. I find a lot of young dentists try to diagnose everything when the patient first arrives with them. As we know, we need to take time to take stock, to sit, to look at photographs, understand how mandibles move, make sure we don't have TMJ issues that are going on before we can start to make our recommendations. Now, we filmed a small video on this personality profiling and the photographs as well. So please go to www.onlinedentalmentoring to have a look at those. They're free videos for you to access, and I think give a good background to a lot of the points that we make. So after successful communication with the patient about their presenting issues as well as gaining some insight into other issues, we need to step back, carry out a full and thorough diagnosis, which includes the areas that Michael has been speaking about. And from there, we start to look at developing a treatment plan. How do we sequence it? And then we have to prepare ourselves to discuss this with the patient at a separate appointment around a week later. Mike, Do you have, you must have a lot of patients that come in for biopsies and the like, examination, and you're sending them off for CBCT and the like. Do you have a protocol for the discussion, the treatment planning that goes from there? I'm sure it's different for every client, but what do you feel are the good processes that you've worked or developed over the years to assist your discussions with the patient and how to communicate with them what's going on?
Yeah, well, thanks, Gerald. I have to say I really agree with what you just said about taking a deep breath and having the information based on assessment of the patient at the first visit and then having the time to think through a treatment plan rather than somebody as a patient, particularly a new patient, but even one that you've been successfully treating over many years, with a problem that you suddenly start to realise that you may have to do more treatment and involve other teeth, is having the opportunity to really present a very well thought out treatment plan rather than in a 5 or 10 minute brief discussion and then say to the patient, look, we'll give you a quote at the front desk. I think from my experience, certainly, you know, the value of photography for starters, it can't be understated. It's many patients that that I will see, one of the criteria I do too is if a dentist rings me up and says, look, you know, I've got this patient, I'd really like you to see them. It's an ulceration or a red tissue change of some type. I'm not sure what it is. Photography tells me a lot and it's objective. So for instance, you know, many times, even Derry yourself, when you often refer me a patient, you'll always take a photograph of a lesion with a periodontal probe next to it. So that at the time and date that that photograph was taken, if I don't see the patient for 1 or 2 or 3 weeks, I've got an objective measure with a perio probe that I can say, well, the lesion was 5 millimetres at that time. And when I review the patient, if it's clearly 10 millimetres, it's a fair call to say that this lesion is very actively growing. I think the other thing too is the more information you can gather, i.e. imaging, is really imperative as well. So if you have a pain patient of any type, whether it be TMJ pain, whether it be just facial pain, whether you're thinking to yourself, maybe this patient's got some sinusitis issues, is there a dental problem here? Perhaps the colleague that's referred the patient has missed something. You cannot underestimate the value of an OPG radiograph. I swear by them. I don't mind saying in the field of oral medicine, one of the greatest things they found in forensic dentistry was the value of an OPG radiograph, because it actually is a very good way of screening the patient's entirety of their both teeth and maxilla and mandible, and it gives you a good insight into perhaps what the problem is just by viewing the radiograph and asking the appropriate questions. I think the other thing too is that what I often do is I have a particular scenario of questions or considerations I always look at when if a patient's coming to see me with any TMJ problem, and they're simple. And these are what I would like to call four classic, let's say, points of consideration. The first one is, you know, does the patient have hypertrophy of the masseter muscles? We know that facial type, you know, the square, classic cuboidal shaped face, you know, might indicate that the masseters are hypertrophic. Sure, genetically, there may be just a normal anatomical variation for that individual. But the other thing is too, are they a bruxer? Have a look and see, determine if the temporomandibular joints make joint sounds when they move the mandible, whether it be opening and closing or lateral excursions. Again, you know, one of the great things about having that information is any treatment you do on the patient, if they come back to you and say, oh, I'm now getting noises produced in my right jaw joint, I never had that before, you can say, well, as a matter of fact, you did have. And it was also early stage opening, late stage opening. And these are things we'll talk about in future podcasts. I think the other thing too is get an idea what the range of movement of the mandible is. So, for instance, we know that normal opening range for the mouth is between 36 and 52 millimetres. So, you know, if you've got the capacity to measure interincisal distance between the maxillary and mandibular incisor wedges, and let's imagine somebody came in and they opened up 30 millimetres, you have to ask yourself the question, then that's less than the normal range. What else is happening? Is the temporomandibular joints have a slip disc? We call that a closed lock. Is there some masticatory muscle pain, which is restricting function? Does the patient have an enlarged coronoid or elongated coronoid process. Simple things, easy to determine based on examining and also looking at your OPG radiograph. And I think finally, one of the things I always do too is when I'm examining the oral cavity, I always look at things like the Friedman tongue position. So that means have a look at the tongue and the way it actually is relating to the soft palate. We understand that patients, particularly who have larger tongues, which you can determine if the tongue is sitting over the occlusal surfaces of the posterior teeth, which would suggest the tongue is very large for the space that it's provided for. Or alternatively, if the soft palate is elongated, they may have an airway issue, which is what we would refer to as sleep disordered breathing, sleep apnea being one of those considerations. So if you're thinking about modifying the occlusion of the patient and you're thinking about things like, well, if I'm going to do, say, Invisalign treatment and I'm going to align the teeth, are you compromising tongue space? Are you actually going to compromise the airway space, particularly the oropharynx region? And so they're the things I often consider when I'm assessing a patient.
Thanks for that, Mike. So I think the key areas we start to move forwards now is collecting the data, helping the patient understand what's going on in their mouth, not diagnosing at that first visit, sowing the seeds that there are treatment options to A, get them out of pain today, and B, share with them recommendations that you would have for their long-term treatment care. And as Michael was saying, ensuring that their TMJs are stable to undergo any restorative treatment. So at the next podcast, Mike's going to be overviewing his TMJ screening, those four key points he will go into further, and ensuring that the patient's occlusion, if it's going to be changed from either a bite opening procedure, a line of therapy, or changing anterior guidance with regards cosmetic dentistry, we know where the pitfalls are and how to protect ourselves and our patients from issues down the path if we had not looked at those at the outset. So we look forward to you seeing you next week or listening in next week with our next installment focusing on patients' occlusion and TMJs prior to case discussions. Remember to access our videos in our Q&A format at the www.onlinedentalmentoring.com.au website. So until next time, stay safe. It's a goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and invite you to visit onlinedentalmentoring.com to subscribe to access more free podcasts in our video library and also be able to submit your questions for our panel discussion podcasts. And remember, tell your colleagues about us if you feel they'd benefit from the information that we've presented. Until next podcast, take care.